The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max, Monday Night Raw, review.
Welcome everybody to Wrestling to the Max, the Raw review for May 15th, 2017. And we are brought to you by W2Mnet.com. That's right, the place where you'll find all the great wrestling content plus a lot more. Also, don't forget to go subscribe to Wrestling to the Max on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts. Plus, if you love W2Mnet.com and you love all the different shows that we have on there, go subscribe to the W2M Network. That's right, that'll give you everything our website has to provide. Plus a lot of content. I mean, just when it comes to wrestling, tons of great stuff. So trust me, you don't want to miss a minute of the action. Go subscribe to either of those streams. And of course, don't forget to go rate and review both of them. That just helps get more eyes and ears on us. Of course, I am Gary Vaughn, and tonight our host is Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And Paul, we have a interesting Raw to get into. This is really setting up to Extreme Rules.
Yeah, we actually have a whole ton to talk about here, and that's because Braun Strowman had that elbow surgery, and instead of the 1 to 2 months that he was expected to be out, he is now out for 6, which tells me that there was something way more serious going on than anybody in the WWE knew about before he got under that knife.
Oof.
WWE has a small panic attack as they open the show and send Kurt Angle out there, who breaks the bound that Braun is in fact out for 6 months. Lesnar needs a contender for that title match that he's going to have at Great Balls of Fire here in Dallas. So at Extreme Rules, it's going to be Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt, and Roman Reigns in a fatal five-way to determine a number one contender. And this brings the whole gaggle out, right? Because Reigns is out here saying that this match shouldn't even be happening. I beat Taker at WrestleMania. I put Strowman down in that old ambulance deal. This is my yard, and I'm the only one that can beat Lesnar. Balor comes out and says, "Hey, man, I never lost the title. I've beaten you, Roman, and I have what it takes to do this." And then, of course, everybody else comes out too. Joe's had enough. He says that he's going to keep doing what he does, and that will eventually lead him to the championship. Bray is Bray as he cuts his own special, unique promos that he's become so known for. And then Finn, and then Rollins, of course, comes out and does his spiel. And we have a big brawl, as you would expect. It falls to the outside. Balor takes out Reigns, sends him running to the outside. Rollins hits a sling blade once again on Reigns to send him to the floor. There's a big pile out there, so he does a big dive to end the segment. Afterwards, Kurt Angle sort of yells at everybody and makes Rollins and Wyatt and Balor and Reigns for this evening one-on-one. So what did you think about this opening segment? And do you think they did the smart thing here, knowing that Braun's going to be down making this match and sort of setting up Extreme Rules going this way to crown a contender instead of just worrying about feuds?
Yeah, I think it's a smart idea, only for the fact that, you know, you definitely lose a big piece of what you were wanting to do in that main event picture for the short term, and maybe even possibly for the long term. We don't really know what their ideas exactly were going even past, you know, this pay-per-view and a few more, and especially leading up to SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. But what we do know now is without Braun, they've got to finalize a picture that makes sense, and I think the five guys they have involved are the right picks. I think it made sense. I'm okay with that. The one thing I will say, though, is in this short-term picture, you really do have to give leeway a little bit to the fact that Roman Reigns and Finn Balor both have strong arguments for why they deserve to be in that picture, mm-hmm. where the other three guys don't have a really big stand for themselves to kind of sit there and say, hey, you know, we definitely deserve it. Because I look at Samoa Joe, yes, he's the destroyer. Yes, he's running through people, but he was never promised a universal title shot, from my understanding, unless it was Triple H backstage telling him that. Mm-hmm. Seth Rollins, sure, you know, he's been in it, but really, let's be honest, not a big on him either. Nothing that exactly promises him that main event title shot. And of course, you know, looking at especially Bray Wyatt, I mean, my God, I mean, all he did is show up on Raw, and now he's gotten a chance at the title. That still doesn't spell a lot to me. So I would almost lean towards being Roman and Finn, but I get why they're throwing these other guys in. They need to have more firepower down the line for these, you know, future feuds, right? You just mentioned it, for down the line, and this is why they're doing this. So I'm okay with that, and I think a five-way match will actually kind of be fun at Extreme Rules. I think it's something that's not the norm, and I think there will be a lot of crazy things take place. So I'm actually down for it. I just think, when I think common sense, I think it's more Finn Balor versus Roman Reigns. I don't know if you agree with me, but that would make the most common sense.
I think you could make arguments for the other three. Obviously, they spent the most time on Roman and Finn here, setting up their sort of arguments. Because you're right, they do have the strongest appeals as far as, hey, I've never lost a belt. Roman, I've beat all these guys. And, you know, he's the only one here that has actual experience facing Brock, too. So they could have brought that up if they wanted to. But like I said, you can make a case for everybody else. Bray technically never got a rematch for the World Heavyweight title, so they could just sort of shunt that over to the Universal thing if they wanted to. Seth Rollins did beat Triple H at WrestleMania. He's got some other... and he's also beaten Joe a couple times on the road there. Joe sort of has the weakest argument other than just, I beat people up, and, you know, I feel like they've treated him like a big deal without really showing all too often that he's a big deal. So they have a little bit of work to do on Joe, I would say. Everybody else, you could make a case for at some points. I thought this opening segment was fine, though. I think it's smart to try to gear up Extreme Rules to set up Great Balls of Fire. One, because I'm going, and I was dreading going because I thought that show was just going to be terrible. But they're starting to get you hyped for future bookings and sort of planning around all these feuds and using what they have left of their main event scene to create something that you want to watch. And I think they did a very good job of that in those two matches that Kurt Angle made. Roman Reigns and Finn Balor was fantastic. Roman Reigns ends up winning in this great match where, you know, they work over Finn. It goes for Roman Reigns' injuries, and Reigns just sort of happens to overcome, and now they're split 1-1, which could lead to a fun match down the road, maybe for the title, maybe not. And excuse me. And then Bray and Seth Rollins end up main eventing. Joe does a run in, beats down Seth to give him the win by DQ. Bray ends up joining in and then ends up laying out everybody to sort of get some wind back in his sails after the whole House of Horrors debacle. So what'd you think about those two matches, Gary?
You know, I think both matches were fine. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, really, out of both these matches, I think everybody kind of came out smelling pretty good, if I could say it that way. And, you know, you've got to appreciate the fact that they still made Roman Reigns look good with one arm, and the way that match kind of went through fruition. I love the kind of the battle there between Finn Balor and Roman Reigns, especially with Roman hitting the ring post as hard as he did and showcasing, you know, this guy went through a lot and he still was able to beat Finn Balor. But yet Finn Balor really never looked bad. And to go into the final match there, you're right. Seth Rollins, you know, once again, just proves how just definitely dominant he is against Bray Wyatt. But Bray Wyatt always sticks around. And of course, Samoa Joe getting involved in that whole fray. It all works to kind of give everybody an opportunity to look good. And that's what they want. I really look at this as, you know, like you're talking about, this sets up everybody to be those main event players going from here and down the line. And right now, they're really trying to set that even playing field for all these guys. And, you know, it's working for the most part. You know, it's not exactly, you know, the best we've ever seen or anything, but I think it's doing the job that it needs to do at this short term, especially with them having to hit that panic button with, I think, some of their other plans going forward. So.
Right. I think the most important thing really to try to take away from this is that they're just sort of using the feuds they already have to bump up what they got going on. And all these feuds going on into Extreme Rules and one match to determine, like, it makes them feel bigger. It makes everybody feel important here. I think you're exactly right in that everybody really comes out of this, I think, looking strong. Joe continues his thing with Seth, obviously. They didn't really touch too much on Finn and Bray all that much, and then Roman is sort of left out in the wind, but he's got beef with everybody seemingly at this point, because everybody obviously wants to take down the big dog and all that. So I'm looking forward to that Fatal 5-Way. Like you said, I think it'll be a really fun match. Apparently it's going to have the Extreme Rules stipulation on it, so you could see a lot of crazy stuff like you were mentioning too. So.
Oh yeah, I can't. See, that's what makes it so much more exciting. And you know, all these guys are huge names, and that's so fun to have an Extreme Rules match with all these big names, and just the options are just out there, right? To pick anybody. I mean, when we actually get to that Extreme Rules and we actually do our predictions, it's going to be hard. I mean, we can guesstimate, and we can maybe make a pretty solid choice, but I think that really, honestly, they could go a multitude of ways. That's what makes this whole thing fun.
Yeah, and they still have a lot of time to build this. I mean, the show is June 4th, so that's still, we got two more Raws to get there, and it'll be interesting to see if they have Finn use the demon shtick here. It'll be interesting to see how much Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins gets ramped up. And it'll be interesting to see how they try to work Roman into everything, seeing as he's sort of the guy on the outside looking in here as far as being involved in feuds and whatnot. So tons to look forward to there. The other big singles thing I want to talk about right now is The Miz and Dean Ambrose, who first off, they go one-on-one. And they have themselves one heck of a match. This one also ends in shenanigans as Miz tries to use Maurice for a shield. Ambrose sort of dives over him to get at the Miz. They have some more brawling. Maurice jumps up on the apron to distract the referee. Miz goes for a low blow. It gets blocked. Ambrose then hits Miz low to force the DQ. So Miz does win. This is a really, really super fun brawl that ends up getting taken to the back later on as the Miz and Maurice start complaining to Angle, saying that, you know, did you see what Ambrose did? He's cheating. He's doing this and that, trying to hold on to this Intercontinental Championship. And Angle finally has enough and says, you know what, I'm gonna make it the title match for Extreme Rules. And if Ambrose gets disqualified, he will lose the championship. And Maurice kind of continues to babble on in French about how much Angle sucks or whatever. And then, you get the fun part of the Drifter strolling on through randomly playing a song, and Angle just makes the most perfect face.
Yeah. Oh man, he's just like, I love it, you know, and it's weird as the Drifter is and all that. It's kind of gotten fun. As much as we hated him on NXT and seeing him every week, this is actually kind of endearing. I don't know why it is, but it is, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's just fun. I look forward to trying to see how they're going to stick him in every week, and every week so far it's been just perfect.
I agree, but you know, the one thing I do want to see eventually is, instead of just some of these, you know, while they're doing interviews or something like that, I'd love to see him one day just, you know, that they're having a match and then all of a sudden you see him walk through ringside just playing the guitar. The two wrestlers look at him as they're watching him go by, and then they restart the match as he walks. Even walking through the ring, I know, right? In between them. Just kind of keeps going. Anyway, there's a myriad of things they could do. I'd love to see him sit at commentary, come out, strum, sit down at commentary. They're like, hey, what are you doing? And then get up and leave. That would be another good thing. So we'll see. But yeah, enough about the Drifter. You know, this match actually was really good, and I have to give him credit. I mean, for a long time now, we've just kind of saying Dean Ambrose is doing his same shtick. He's having the matches that we always see Dean Ambrose have. It's nothing special, nothing new. But, I mean, actually, tonight he picked up the pace. I really feel like he actually gave a lot more in this match. I think The Miz continues to showcase himself in a positive way. And I think they put on a pretty darn good one here. And I really look at this and say to myself, okay, this feud is not as boring as I was kind of scared it would be. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, I mean, we could see some negatives here in this feud only because of the fact this is not like we saw with Miz and John Cena. This is just kind of a different cat. But I do like what they did here tonight. I think it makes this feud feel more important, especially since it was such a good match. And I love that spot where Ambrose, you know, does his normal thing where he falls and bounces off the ring after acts like he's going to fall out and come with a clothesline and, you know, miscounters it to the skull-crushing finale. I don't know why I'm blanking the name. Anyway, I love that. That's something great. See, that they need more of that because I'll be honest with you, Paul. As much as I do like Dean Ambrose, I'm, you know, kind of fond of this guy. I get so tired of seeing that. That has got wears on me every time I see that signature move that he has, you know. So it's kind of fun to see people counter it, and it makes it better. I know it sounds funny, but for a long time, no matter what, that move always was successful. Now it's not. Gives it some little flair to it now, so appreciated that. There's just a lot here I could say some good things about, but the last thing I'll just kind of mention is the fact that, you know, they really gave this a special feeling for the fact that, you know, you do, like you just mentioned, the backstage segment with Kurt Angle, and the fact that you have The Miz saying, look, you know, I want something that's going to be, you know, and you know, stricter, you know, because Ambrose is going to use everything and he's going to do all these bad things. And so I appreciate that he brought that up because you would think that he would want an Extreme Rules match too, but no, it's kind of the opposite. He wants it to be disqualifications. He wants it to be anything that he can to be, you know, right down the line. That way he can cheat himself and win. So we'll see, but I appreciated that. I think that made some common sense too tonight. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I mean, Dean Ambrose is a crazy person. The Miz doesn't want to be in the ring with a crazy person, you know? I mean, he wants as many stipulations working in his favor as he can get. So I think it all makes sense, too. The Miz is just such a great character. I think he's really been finding his stride in the ring. And he just continues to get better and better every week. And it feels like he's almost kind of wasted in the Intercontinental Championship thing. But there's not a whole ton going on. And you know, with everybody else sort of spoken for, this is all you got left as far as guys who are sort of made that aren't cruiserweights or tag teams. So,
yeah, you know, that is very, very true. And looking at, you know, The Miz in general, just sticking to him, I mean, I agree with you. I think this guy really could be in the main event picture. I really do. And he's been there. He's been at the top of the mountain before, but they kind of, you know, lost their way with him and let's be honest, kind of not really interested in putting him back up there. But I think the guy is so talented. I mean, on the mic, even in the ring, he's pretty fluid. I think that he's got so much talent that really sometimes I kind of wish he'd at least get one or two shots at that main event title, you know, somewhere. I don't know where, but somewhere. Even if he doesn't win, I think he deserves it. I think he puts in a lot of good effort. And, I mean, for a guy that may not be exactly a huge fan favorite with a lot of people, I'm probably in the minority of, I think The Miz has earned his stripes. I mean, I don't know.
I think you're right. If it wasn't for Brock Lesnar sort of holding that thing hostage right now, you know, maybe he could be in the mix. But with Brock there and them very much, I think, having a specific story they want to tell with Brock and Roman going forward, obviously we know that there's at least some plan for a year-long feud between Reigns and Lesnar, even though they haven't really touched on it all that much. There's the obvious plan there of trying to go back and play off of what they've already done with that moving forward. So, of course, with all the injuries they've taken as far as, you know, guys at the top of the card, that could change. You know, but we'll just have to, I guess, wait and see on that. But for sure, Miz needs to be in the main event picture sooner rather than later. It's just there's no place for him. And until Brock drops the belt, there won't be. So if he gets the IC title, maybe he'll get a chance to feud with some of these top guys to sort of elevate his position some.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, once again, like I said, he earned his stripes. And if he continues down this path of really entertaining the fans and being the one guy that people are talking about after every show, it's going to happen, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's talk some cruiserweights, because I really enjoyed this tag team match. Neville and TJP take on Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher. Excuse me. They don't get a ton of time, obviously, because their spots on Raw are meant to be teasers to sort of lead you into 205 Live at this point, but Neville and TJP focus pretty much on Aries' leg. Gallagher gets in all his stuff, though. Aries tries his hardest, but it just wasn't meant to be. As Aries eats a detonation kick from TJP and gets the victory for his team. Like, this is fun. I wish this could have been something more on 205 Live, but I'm glad I got the spotlight here on Raw, because at least it highlights the big thing that's going on with the Cruiserweights, and that's this feud and all the stuff going on between Neville and TJP, and Gallagher sort of on the fringes as Aries continues to try to wrestle that belt away from Neville.
Yeah, I mean, this could be something that really, let's be honest, could main event 205 Live and really give it a lot of credence for what it's worth and all that. I think maybe the reason they had it here on Raw is because there's more eyes on this product and more people may get interested in watching 205 via this. And I think really, honestly, this did a really good job in really helping TJP out a lot, too. I mean, this is, you know, as this match kind of went through its paces and the way it all ended up being where Neville and TJP come out with the victory, I thought to myself, man, for what we saw TJP go through earlier this year, you know, of course, you know, from going to the top of the mountain in the Cruiserweights to, man, some valleys to where really people were not caring a whole lot about him. Mm-hmm. He's done an awesome job with Neville, and Neville really has given him a platform to really showcase his ability and showcase through this new heel persona that he is an important wrestler. He does have skills. It's just, you know, his personality doesn't come out so well, which Neville's helping. And it's given him some actual meaning to this division. Before this, let's be honest, TJP was just another guy. He was in the background. No one really cared. So I think this match, you know, and along with some of the other ones they'll do in the future, I think really helps TJP. I think it even gives Neville a little bit of more of a heel credibility, because, you know, down the line, when it's time for TJ Perkins to finally get that opportunity to get that belt, Neville's not going to let it happen. He's not just going to stand there and let him take it. So that's what the fun chase is going to be, and to see how that works out and everything in between. So this match was fine. I really appreciated how much attention they gave to, you know, TJ Perkins in this, and it made sense. I mean, I have no complaints against it.
I don't either. I mean, we know that it's going to be a Cruiserweight title match at Extreme Rules between Aries and Neville already. It'll be interesting. Like, I really hope they get a stip, and maybe we'll get some more of that on 205 Live tomorrow, because Aries will face TJP one more time, one-on-one. So, you know, I'm interested in this feud, don't get me wrong. I think they're doing anything around Neville, I'm usually already interested in. He's just such a great character. And I think Aries has more than done his part here, too. But, I mean, Jack Gallagher, I think, is gotten a little bit out of this too, just, you know, guilty by association, and in this case that's a good thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, you gotta appreciate the fact that they found him in this mix too, because I mean, he's already a fan favorite. And with Austin Aries, Austin Aries is a guy that I think people who are really smart fans, they know this guy, they love him. Like me, I've always been an Austin Aries fan. I don't know why, I just love the guy. But some of the newer fans that are just now getting a chance to really still know him in his young tenure with WWE, mm-hmm. I don't know that they're sold on this, you know, face Aries. I don't think they really still know him a whole lot, but they don't have to know Jack Gallagher to know that they love him, right? So I think these two guys feed off each other just as much as TJP and Neville do. So that's an appreciated partnership there too, because you're getting both these guys over just by having some of that association. And so I think it's just a great mixture here, and they're doing a good job with it, even though the main event Cruiserweight Championship will not really be based on Jack Gallagher or TJP.
Right. But, I mean, it's good to grow these characters, so when you start branching out some more with your feuds, you know, they'll be there and at least have something going for them.
But exactly. And when you get to another match here, I'm going to talk about that exact same thing. These 205 guys being mixed around in Raw, smart.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump to the women real fast here, too, because, one, I don't think it's going to take very long, and, two, they sort of got put to the side a little here. Sasha Banks goes one-on-one with Alicia Fox. They go maybe 3 minutes. Alicia Fox gets the sort of surprising win as Banks, she ends up getting taken to the floor, comes back into the ring favoring her knee, and eats an axe kick for Alicia Fox to get the victory. So there seems to be something brewing there, as it appears that just is wasting time almost before Sasha turns heel. And then Alexa Bliss gets a promo, and she is her usual wonderful self. She's running down New Jersey. She's talking about how great she is. She gets what she's doing all the time, and that's you know, we talk about that often. Bayley shows up. She wants her title back. She's using her rematch clause at Extreme Rules. Bliss says that since it's Extreme Rules, you know, there's not going to be anybody to save you. It'll actually be over, and I can take you out for good. And to sort of extend on that, they end up getting into a brawl. Bliss goes and grabs a kendo stick and just absolutely beats the bejesus out of Bayley with it and sends her to the floor to look strong. Later on in the evening, Bayley's getting looked at in the back. Angle says that he's going to make the rematch at Extreme Rules one-on-one. Bayley, however, wants to get extreme, so Angle's definition is to put them in a kendo stick on a pole match. That's a little lame, if you ask me, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that is lame, and I kind of thought to myself, why is this a stipulation? Like, okay, yes, I get it, you know, Alexa Bliss used the kendo stick on Bayley in this one instance. So that automatically means it has to be a kendo stick match. So hopefully that being the stipulation, hopefully they can have a cleaner match and it doesn't have to be all about the extracurriculars, you know, mm-hmm. the other items that'll be involved. Hopefully that does not matter to what's going to happen in that actual match. And maybe that's why they did this. Maybe they do want that clean match so people don't say, oh, well, that match was because it had everything else involved. I think they can do a great job. I think both are super talented, Bayley and Alexa Bliss. So, I mean, that's good, I think, for the most part. But I still, I'm with you. Kind of a lame stipulation for, you know, this Extreme Rules match. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do want to bring up, and I'm really curious what you think about this, Paul, and what you have to say. I think, you know, you just mentioned Alexa Bliss does fine on the mic. Did a great job with everything. The one thing I wish that she would have imparted to us and really kind of mentioned, especially for the fact that, you know, she's sitting here talking to Bayley, you know, they're kind of conversing back and forth, and she's, you know, trying to let, you know, Bayley knows that you're sweet, you're nice, you really don't belong in these kind of matches. I wish she would have brought up the fact that she's been in them and has some had some success even. You know, she beat Becky Lynch in a tables match, right, for the title, mm-hmm. and she's been in a cage match. So she's done these Extreme Rules matches. I wish she would have brought that up, you know.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, a missed opportunity for sure there just to sort of talk about how nasty a person she is as compared to Bayley's happy-go-lucky, usual self, and sort of just really play off how different they are. But, you know, I think this was just more about trying to get them towards that match and where that's all going to go. So,
yeah,
I do appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I say that now, and they could bring this up. Like you mentioned earlier, they still have two Raws, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of time to kind of bring that out, and maybe that's going to be needed down the line. So I'm just saying, when you're setting it up, I think it would be nice to hear that. But, you know, we'll see. And, you know, and I think, you know, this whole thing with, I think, Bayley, hopefully it'll help her. I really hope so because of the fact that, you know, I think she needs some more momentum going right now. I mean, she doesn't have to be the champion to get more momentum in her favor. I think right now people aren't thinking about her is what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's kind of going where you see her come out, the crowd pops for about 2 seconds, and then they're kind of quiet down. You know, you need more. And I think right now with this aggression we've seen in the past with the aggressive Bayley, you're going to get more, I think, fanfare behind her. So hopefully that's what helps her is through this whole process of going through more of a hardcore style match to get people to see that she's nice, but she also has a vicious side. I think that'll bring in some more fans for Bayley. So, really quickly, I do want to touch. You were talking about Sasha Banks and, of course, Alicia Fox. I think that was a match that I kind of at first thought, oh, why are they doing this again? Sasha Banks, okay, let's just victory, move on. But no, I think, you know, this is interesting for the fact that Sasha Banks is in a weird spot. I thought we were going to get her in a more of a big picture, you know, situation. Right now, she's battling Alicia Fox and not being successful. That's kind of weird. And maybe it makes sense for the fact that they're not ready. I think she's in a holding pattern, if you ask me. It seems like Sasha Banks is in this big holding pattern, and they really don't know what to do with her until they have a certain point they want her to be at. I don't know if you agree with that, Paul. It's odd.
I absolutely agree with that because, as I've said on this show and in some of our other episodes across our Wrestling the Max banner here, I think that the plan is to do Bayley and Sasha again in Brooklyn for SummerSlam on the big stage and let them, you know, see if they can't recapture the magic. But to do that and to get there, they still have 2 or 3 months because SummerSlam obviously is until August. Mm-hmm. And they have Extreme Rules, they have Great Balls of Fire, and then some time to try to build up to SummerSlam on Raw. So, you know, this is definitely, I think, a holding pattern for her. And if she's ever going to turn heel and if Bayley's going to win the title back, I don't know exactly how this match at Extreme Rules is going to play out because you could obviously have Sasha run in again and sort of cost Bliss the title and shunt that over for a little bit while you have Bayley try to, you know, deal with Nia or something like that as you get towards SummerSlam. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting things and with the way the women's division is sort of shaping up as far as trying to get towards, you know, Extreme Rules and beyond. It's not like there's one horse sort of ahead of everybody else. Sort of like SmackDown has Charlotte, and everybody seems to sort of be trying to play catch up to where she is at this point in time, right? Whereas here on Raw, it's much more even, just because either they're coming over from SmackDown and still trying to establish themselves, or they haven't really been so important in the past because it's been about making Charlotte, it's been about making Sasha, it's been about trying to find something else that works outside of that, and they haven't really done that yet, except for Alexa Bliss, who they just got from SmackDown, who's still, like I said, trying to establish herself. So there's a lot of things, I think, at play here on Raw as far as women trying to, you know, establish the new pecking order, if you will.
Yeah, I think you're completely right with that. And, you know, you got to go through the growing pains. And I think that's what we're seeing here. We really are. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't hurt the momentum too much. I hope people can still see the good things that are going on here in this division and not really focus on some of the other parts that are maybe not so pretty. And we'll see. And before we move on out of this, I do want to mention, and I told you guys I was going to talk about this. I think, you know, when it comes to the situations like Alicia Fox has Noam Dar with her, mm-hmm. and that's another 205 Live guy. I appreciate that. I think for the fact that they could have just left him in the back and not made it a big deal, but him being there and, of course, him being in some of the backstage interviews, I think makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the crossover with some guy that may not be actually wrestling on the show helps his appearance, helps him be more acknowledged with people, so which I think also helps 205. So I think that was good. I'm glad they had him out there.
Just, you know, WWE using continuity and with their acts, because like you said, the cruiserweights haven't really taken off, I think, like they've wanted it to, so they could have left Noam in the back, and I don't think anybody would have really cared all that much. But putting him out there and really trying to do something with Alicia and this whole act with Noam, I think makes sense. I mean, we see this on SmackDown all the time where they got to do something with these guys and girls to try to do something with them, because now, you know, you have less people to worry about getting time on your show, so it opens it up for more people to try to get opportunities. And I'm not saying Alicia is a technical wizard in the ring or anything, but I think in the past year she's proven she can be entertaining. So why not take a shot with her, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You're paying her, so why not use her? So.
Yeah. Absolutely. So really all we have left to talk about is the tag team stuff, and boy, is there a whole lot to get into. So let's start with the big shock, well, maybe not so shocking thing, the Golden Truth. They meet backstage. Truth apologizes about the loss last week, and Gold's like, hey, man, don't worry about it. We've stuck through thick and thin together. We're a team. And tonight when we face Gallus and Anderson, we're going to just jump right back on the horse and kick the crap out of them and all this other stuff. And match time comes, and Goldust decides to turn. He attacks Truth during their intro, beats him up, tosses him to the floor, and sort of stands tall. So I don't necessarily agree with this move. I love Goldust, though, don't get me wrong. And I enjoy Truth. So we'll see what happens here, but I mean, I don't know if I approve of them. Even if it's a tag team they were doing a lot with, I don't know if it's really a smart idea to just sort of toss them to the wind like this.
Well, what do we always complain about or talk about? The lack of bodies in the tag division, right? Mm-hmm. There's not enough tag teams to really go around. I mean, it's funny to say that, but there really isn't. We end up with the same feuds week in and week out because they just don't have the depth there in that spot. Well, now you just ruined another one. So you're even more shorthanded. And I don't know, maybe this speaks well to something we don't know about. Maybe there's some things going on backstage where they're going to pair some other guys up that we just have not thought about, or they're maybe bringing something somebody up, which is very doubtful. They wouldn't do it right now, at least from my point of view. So this is kind of odd, Paul. I'm right there with you. I like both these guys, Goldust and Truth. Both are a lot of fun. You got to love their veteranship. That they really are a great presence, but it's just odd timing. It just does not feel right. This is out of nowhere, which sometimes that's fun. You like to see some of the surprises take place. It kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat, you know. But still, this is nothing super spectacular. And unless you just love one of these guys, I don't think you come out of this being like, oh, wow, man, I can't wait for this Extreme Rules. I don't think it's really the case. I think you're just kind of like, okay, I know what the kickoff match is going to be.
Right. Hey, that's exactly it. Exactly it.
So, and it's terrible to say that because, once again, both these guys are awesome, right? Goldust is a fan. I'm a big fan of his, and R-Truth is great, too. And I want to see him do good things, even if it's singles. But I think this kind of speaks well to the fact that I think that they're looking at maybe Goldust moving on. I wonder if this is leading up to him retiring. I know it sounds weird, but I have that feeling, because why would they do it this now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Goldust isn't exactly a young man anymore, so that does make sense. And if he gets a glory run as a heel, going back to sort of what made Goldust Goldust, then I'm okay with that. Just because, I mean, growing up, Goldust was one of my favorite people to watch, just because he's so different. And I know he's sort of like just dancing a dancing leaf on the wind these days in the WWE, but I mean, if Miz does win the Intercontinental Championship, I think, you know, they could have a fun feud. Or if it's still Dean, or however this is going to go, like, it could work out for Goldust to at least get one big match before he hangs him up.
Mm-hmm. I hope you're right. I would love that. I would just love to see Goldust come back the way he once was and just get that whole feeling, and just to see the reaction of the current wrestlers, you know, in that division, in the mid-card. Mm-hmm. It'd be a lot of fun.
I agree. I agree with you completely. Well, as they kill one team, we get to see another one sort of come together a little bit more as Enzo and Cass come out and do their thing, and then Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil show up. O'Neil runs down their thing. It sort of does Enzo and Cass's thing on his own. Says, you know, that Crews beat up Enzo last week, and after tonight, you know, you can sort of join up with the Titus brand. Big Cass says, oh no, you and me are going to go one-on-one, Titus. And he doesn't, Titus doesn't want to wrestle, obviously, because he's wearing all these fancy clothes and shoes and all these things that, you know, big-time stars, quote-unquote, wear. So the match turns out to happen. Big Cass and Titus O'Neil, they go about a minute and a half. This Cass ends up winning with the big boot, and Enzo sort of steals Titus's phone to take a selfie, and Crews jumps into the ring and lays him out. Does this do anything for you, Gary? Because I'm struggling a little here.
I'm struggling a lot.
Yeah.
I used to love Enzo and Cass. They were one of my favorite tag teams coming out of NXT. And, you know, it's not that these guys have just, you know, had terrible matches or anything, but I think it's just the interest factor is just slowly but surely being sucked out of them somehow, some way.
Right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the matchups and the fact that they lack any serious feuds. The feuds that they've been in have been okay at best. And so I look at this as a situation where now you're here on Monday Night Raw and people are kind of halfway interested in Enzo's hometown. And then you bring out, you know, this whole situation between Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil, which, let's be honest, the Titus O'Neil brand is so lackluster. I get it. Okay, so I understand you can have Apollo Crews and Enzo Amore go out and have a match because, you know, really, Apollo's really not a bad guy. He's just kind of, you know, following the leadership of a veteran. So we have to flip-flop it, right? You have to have the heel versus face. You can't have a face versus face. You want to make it mean something. At the same point, no one cares. No one cares that Titus O'Neil is getting beat up. We see that all the time. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of walked away from this thinking to myself, oh boy, I had to kind of my head between my hands.
Yeah, a little bit of a misfire here. Obviously, the story is Titus trying to sort of turn Apollo Crews and officially join the Titus brand and watch him tag up and whatever. But, I mean, Enzo and Cass, just a fall from grace. From last year, looking like they were going to challenge for the tag team titles and end up running the show there to just sort of slumming it and having to, you know, rehash fuse with Gallus and Anderson or just sort of being stuck on the sideline. And that's a real shame because they had so much promise coming out of NXT, and now they have a hole they have to dig themselves out of. So we'll just have to, I guess, keep watching because, man, I just, outside of the Hardy Boys, it's kind of a shallow pool as far as tag teams goes, and it got shallower on this episode.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, I don't want to make it more shallower than it already is, but I think the only thing, unless they have some great feud that comes about for Enzo and Kaz, it's going to come down to if they want to save both these guys, they've at this point are going to have to take a singles run for Kaz and maybe make Enzo the manager, because if nothing changes, people are going to even start to hate these guys, I think, instead of really just cheering them on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you got to do something with them and soon because the ship is sinking for those guys. So, and speaking of the Hardy Boys, Jeff Hardy and Sheamus go one-on-one. The partners on the outside end up getting involved some more as Matt and Cesaro have a big brawl, which ends up sort of distracting Sheamus, who ends up eating a twist of fate and a swanton from Jeff. I'm really looking forward to their match now that Sheamus and Cesaro sort of full-blown heels. And whether it gets a stip or not, I don't know if I really care so much just because I enjoyed their last match so much. But I'm looking forward to this. This is interesting to me just because Cesaro and Sheamus being on the same page and being heels is a fresh look for them. And the Hardys are extremely motivated, seemingly, to make sure that not only they continue to look good, but that Sheamus and Cesaro also look incredibly good in all this, too.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, too. They really want to keep Cesaro and Sheamus as dominant as they can without being too dominant, right? They want them to be the biggest contenders at this point, which only makes sense, you know, and I think it's kind of working to an extent. And I think, you know, for the most part, I mean, this has stayed pretty interesting for the fact that, you know, you've had this going on for quite a while now. And, you know, I think the interest has not waned too much. I am looking forward to seeing what they're doing. I think that they could have a case for Cesaro and Sheamus winning and, you know, maybe the Hardys having to do the whole chase all over again or following up with something else that could be even, you know, more interesting with maybe another tag team thrown in and involved in this whole situation. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, we have the Hardys at the top of this division. People love them. The fans love them from the past. The fans just endear them with all their heart. But yet everybody else is kind of a little bit below them. But, you know, for the most part, I think that they will have something great coming up in the near future. And I think that they at least are in a more positive light at this point with this whole feud and instead of what they could be. So,
mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. So I mean, it's good stuff there. I think we just got to put a number on this show, Gary. So what you got?
You know, actually, the matches on this show, for the most part, were not bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what's going to really, I think, bring the rating up for me. I really do. And, you know, looking at it, I mean, there were a few spots you're kind of, you know, and maybe you can kind of make some argument against and say that, you know, kind of brought the show down. But I think for me, I'm going to give it a 7.5. I think that they really had a good showing here. I think if some of the other segments would have been a little bit better and you would have had some more oomph to maybe, you know, like we were talking about, some of the situations, Goldust and Truth, or heck, even Titus O'Neil and that whole situation, I think you could have got an 8 out of me, possibly, maybe even a 9 if you had all the matches be amazing. So 7.5 is where I stand.
I think that's very generous of you, Gary. I enjoyed the show as far as them trying to right the ship and get things going. And as far as the main event goes and the Intercontinental title picture and the tag team titles go, I think they did very well with all of that. But everything else outside of Alexa Bliss's amazing promo was just sort of there to sort of like, why do this? You're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little here. So I'm going to go 6.5, but that shouldn't take away from what was a really fun episode of Raw. There's some good matches on here. To almost great. I mean, Balor and Reigns was really, really good and left you wanting more. I think there's a lot of good stuff going towards Extreme Rules, Gary.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, and it's one of those that, you know, it's nice to come out of a Raw feeling like that it's a direction, and it's a direction that you kind of enjoy instead of one that you're like, still looking at the direction you guys are giving me, but they make no sense. So I think for the most part, and that's kind of why my higher rating too, I think there was a lot of common sense in this Raw, despite maybe some of the, you know, low points. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, make sure you go check out WTMNet.com. We appreciate everybody's coming to join us tonight. Of course, if you want to go find more of our content, don't forget to go subscribe to Wrestling to the Max and go do that on iTunes or wherever you find your podcast. Plus, don't forget, if you want all the other great stuff that we have to offer when it comes to the W2MNet family, then make sure you go check out the W2M Network on iTunes or any other place you find your podcast. So go do that as well if you want to go get everything that our whole website has to offer. And, of course, I'm Gary Vaughn, and that is Mr. Paul Easer, and we will catch you guys down the road.
Have a good one, guys.